Well, hello everyone. Welcome back. Today is Friday, April 15th, 2016. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, yes, it is the 15th of April. Today is tax day. I hope that you remember that. So that means if you haven't done your taxes, you have until midnight tonight to get things in the mail. Usually, you know, it's funny. It's always the same news story every April 15th. The news crews are usually somewhere downtown at the main post office watching the last taxpayers get things in before midnight. And interestingly enough, the post office is usually open to stamp those letters by the 15th of April, at least to get them in without penalty. But anyway, beyond that, how are you? Oh my goodness, middle of April. We are halfway through this month. Another 2 weeks, the warm weather will be here to stay. I hope I'm not speaking too soon. I think it's kind of broken here. We're getting now weather every day in the 60s. That's a good thing. I'm so happy, so happy, so happy to see now this change in the weather. Oh my gosh. Of course, I do have my allergies to remind me that it's also spring, but hey, I'll just deal with that anyway. So how are things going on? Lots of interesting stories. This week I've seemed to I don't know why, been paying attention a bit to what I guess I'll just call them preservation stories, people who are working to preserve a community, to preserve a history, to preserve something that is unique about their own communities. One story was shared that I saw actually, was it last night, about an effort to preserve a cemetery. And this is coming out of Florida. I know there have been preservation or cemetery preservation stories out of Florida in the past. I remember several years ago, several of us were actually involved in sort of an email campaign to help keep a cemetery from being, well, just sort of moved. There was nothing wrong with the cemetery. It wasn't even in disrepair, but some people decided that was nice land to put someplace, to put a business. Well, thankfully, there was enough response from the genealogy community and from other aspects of the preservation community online that plans were changed, and I'm really happy about that. But this story today comes from Lincoln Cemetery in Gulfport. Now, I'm assuming that this particular Gulfport is coming out of Florida, which is where I saw the story out of a Florida publication out of Tampa. But it really talks about the efforts of one woman to help preserve a cemetery, a mostly African-American cemetery. Her name, I believe, is Vanessa Gray. She's done an awful lot of work strictly on her own. Now, this is one of those cemeteries. I have visited cemeteries that look like this in the past where the deceased, well, they're placed in a grave, but it's sort of, I don't know if I'll say cemented over or if it's really a vault of sorts that's created, but the length of the coffin is actually seen above ground. 3 or 4 inches is sort of that curved structure that you see. Anyway, the story is there, and I'm going to put a link there for you, but it's really just a story of this woman who's working now to preserve this cemetery. Thankfully, when stories like this reach the press, other people tend to respond. But I hope it's not one of those stories where, you know, the press or the coverage dies down and then the interest wanes. But it's still one of those stories that deserves our attention, deserves our support and assistance if you happen to live anywhere near that community. But I'm often very, very impressed with that. Equally, I know I have mentioned Mrs. Daniels before in the past, a lady, an elder who's working now with a wonderful team of people to preserve Greenwood Cemetery, historic Greenwood Cemetery in St. Louis. These are the stories that, you know, yeah, not just warm your heart, which they do, but it's important, I think, that we really see the story in its entirety, which really means the thankless hours, week after week after week, to put in time to not just preserve what is there, but also to restore some parts and pieces of the burial ground that have fallen into neglect. Sometimes the neglect can consist of just an overgrowth of shrubs, weeds, trees, that sort of thing, of nature sort of taking over. But other times, that neglect consists of really abuse of that burial ground, where things are thrown or discarded, old tires, trash, papers, cans, bottles, and in some cases, even worse than that, needles and other kinds of paraphernalia there. I'm very, very pleased to follow on Facebook the Greenwood Cemetery discussion and how they update what's going on continually. Even recent issues, people were coming to train dogs there on the burial ground, and they very effectively dealt with that and have really been able to get a lot of attention there. So it's one of those things that I just hope that all of us take a look around at the burial grounds around us. I had a chance just this week, oh my goodness, I had a chance to visit a historical burial ground in Granite, Maryland. And this is a particular burial ground of, really, it's just built on what remains of an old estate. And not far from a historic church. And African-American church is down the hill, but up the hill is the family cemetery of some of the original landowners, which is very, very interesting as well. But regardless, whenever one is involved with cemetery work, you know, well, yes, it puts you sort of in confrontation with your own mortality to a degree, but also to realize, you know, our lives that were lived certainly deserve to be remembered. And yeah, I'm really, really happy to read that story out of Florida today. And of course, I'm always happy to see what's going on in St. Louis with the work to, well, to restore Greenwood. And it's one of those things that, you know, I continue to applaud what they're doing. Well, I'm very happy. I always love hearing from people, and very happy to have gotten a response from someone who's still writing and still working and following up with a project that they have begun. And this is an individual who's written me and asked some real pertinent questions about slave records, about slave schedules. And I wanted to talk just a little bit about that in terms of people who are researching that slavery era and how do you get past that. Well, that 1850 period to identify the last slaveholder, does one go strictly to a slave schedule based on a surname, that sort of thing? And I'm very, very happy to see that one of my listeners is really following up in detail. And when I say in detail, they're now looking, okay, let me look and see who the slaveholders were. I'm also looking at the slaveholder or potential slaveholder in proximity to where the family is in 1870. Very good move, very good strategy. And as a result, this person is able to make some good analyses in addition to obtaining papers of the suspected individual or individuals who were the slaveholders, last known slaveholders of the family. And they're reaching some very interesting and very, very valid conclusions as they're making a careful, detailed analysis. I guess my question is, how many of you stop at 1870, and how many of you really make a concerted effort to go beyond it? And what are the steps? Well, one of the things I always tell people, well, to start where you are, and if you're at the point of 1870 and the 1870 census, and I'm not quite sure, I then go right back to that 1870 page and look around. Is there a wealthy landowning family nearby? Is there, now of course, keeping in mind that many people did lose their wealth in the Civil War, but some were able to regain many of their own assets and still continue to maintain some status in that very community. So in other words, when you see your family in 1870 are not quite sure where to go at that point, maybe it's time to then look at the neighbors at this point in full detail. Who were the neighbors in close proximity? Who were the neighbors who also had a little bit of real estate and or personal property? Then take a look also at that very same person, that very same neighbor in 1860. Number one, you want to look at 1860 for a primary reason. You want to make sure that they were truly enslaved. If they were enslaved in 1860, then you will not see your ancestors that you see in 1870. You will not see them by name in 1860. So that way you can make a stronger assumption that they had been enslaved. I said assumption because you won't have an absolute guarantee unless you find a pre-1865 document, perhaps reflecting them and reflecting them in their state of having been held in bondage. But at the same time, what else can you learn? And why am I saying a stronger assumption as opposed to saying concluding? Well, I'm saying that because, you know, there was a lot of movement after the Civil War. It's very possible that family that you find in eastern Arkansas moved there after the Civil War from Virginia, from the Carolinas, from another place. So one should not assume that if you can't find them, absolutely that they were enslaved until you find another document that reflects their state of bondage. There are little things like that to keep in mind. But once you do go back and you find the suspected slaveholder in 1870, and then you go back to 1860 and you see that that person was not only there but also held a number of people enslaved, that would be reflected on the slave schedule, then you can decide then at that point to go and pursue that person's history, try and obtain papers that pertain to that family, looking at chancery records, looking at probate records, looking at deeds of gift, all kinds of things that come from that county and from that community. Quite a few things there that you can do. But I'm just really excited to see that one of my listeners, I'll just simply say hello, Andrew, is really pursuing that in depth and reaching some very, very sound conclusions and is able to now take his research certainly a bit further. Well, anyway, moving on, there are things going on in the genealogy community. And I want to mention, of course, that Maggie, M-A-A-G-I, the Midwest African American Genealogy Institute, is fully underway with registration. It is fully underway. Now, of course, you hear me talk about Maggie all the time, but let me give you some ideas or thoughts about Maggie and why you may want to look at a genealogy institute. Have you ever taken a DNA test, but you're not quite sure what else to do at that point? Or you may want to know more of the stories that are part of your African American family history. Perhaps the Genealogy Institute is for you. Are you a professional genealogist who has a client who is of African American ancestry and you would like some ideas and some directions on where to go for him or for that, or for her, for that client? Are you familiar with resources that might reflect African Americans in one part of the country, but perhaps have a client who's from another part of the country, and you're not really sure what is there or how to approach that? Well, if any of these situations apply to you and your research, then you may want to attend Maggie, the Midwest African American Genealogy Institute. Now, for 3 days in July, that is this July 2016, you'll have a chance to select one of four different tracts devoted to African American genealogy. For the novice, Maggie, as it's often called, can teach you brand new skills, particularly in the foundation course, in the anchor course. For the experienced researcher, there you will be some new resources that you can certainly be exposed to that you may not be using. And, of course, for the person who is an aspiring writer, there are all kinds of ways to write that family narrative, and you have a lot of options that are going to be presented to you that you may not have thought of before. Well, this year at the world-famous Genealogy Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, housed at the Allen County Public Library, Maggie will be settling in for that week after the 4th of July to offer its institute. Maggie will bring together nationally known speakers to a small intimate group to spend 3 intense days of learning, of analysis and of presentation. We're talking July 12th through the 14th, 2016, and spending time with your colleagues can change what you know, influence how you approach, and enhance your knowledge of your own family history. Maggie can enhance how you present your family history data to your clients or to your family. And for many, Maggie will illustrate various methods of writing the family story. Whether you need a foundation course, a writing course, or exploring times before and after the slavery era, or you simply need help in understanding DNA and what all those centimorgans really mean, Maggie will teach you how and where to go next now that you've begun to look at your past. So join the small intimate group at Maggie, the Teaching Institute. The website, of course, is, as you know, MAAGIinstitute.org. Anyway, we're excited. We've got such fabulous speakers, and I'm going to put the link for you there on the podcast website. Well, here's some news coming from OGS, a press release. The National Afro-American Genealogy Conference, hosted by the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. The conference has been set in Atlanta, October 13th through the 16th, 2016. Now, of course, this is something that you don't want to miss in Atlanta because for really researchers of all levels, beginning, intermediate, and advanced family tree researchers, you want to be able to join everyone October 13th through the 16th for the 37th annual conference taking place in Atlanta. The theme this coming year is The Ancestors on My Mind, Discovering Our Ancestors, Our History, and Ourselves Together. This conference is, of course, open to the public, and it will be hosted by the Metro Atlanta chapter of AAHGS, and of course it's going to be at the Westin Atlanta Airport Hotel on Best Road in Atlanta. Reservations can be made at a special rate, and of course I'm putting the link there for you on the podcast website. They're offering more than 30 sessions, which are still to be announced. We're all sitting sort of on the edge of our seats waiting to hear about that as well. But they're going to be talking about everything from resources, research methods, social media, family history, writing and publishing, repositories, and of course, everybody's favorite topic of the day, DNA. Of course, many of you know that OGS is a national nonprofit membership organization, and the commitment is there. The commitment is to the preservation of the history, genealogy, and culture of African ancestored people. And of course, all the links that you need, including the Facebook pages and everything, I'm putting that information there for you on the podcast website. Well, did you catch Bernie Spinnett's show last night? Wow, last night Paula Madison was her guest. Paula Madison is the author of Finding Samuel Low. Samuel Low was a man from China who relocated to Jamaica earlier in the 20th century. And this man lived there for quite some time, had several children in Jamaica, and then migrated back to China in the 1930s. Well, this man happens to be the grandfather of Paula Madison. In her book, Finding Samuel Low, she shares a lot of details about her life growing up in New York with an Asian mother. And certainly their Black identity was a very strong one that she had. That's never, ever been questioned. But the fact is that she was able to not only find information about her grandfather, she actually made a connection with the family. The family of Samuel Low, who's long deceased now. But, oh my goodness, the story in terms of her journey, that's even part of what's there. In addition to her journey, you hear some interesting perspectives that Miss Madison shared with her audience about just daring to look and to embrace all of your history and to embrace all of the components that make you, you. It was a wonderful discussion. It was a wonderful listening experience last night. And I can just only say, yeah, tune in for last night's episode. Of course, if you miss it or if you missed it last night, you can always catch it on the podcast. You can catch it on the Blog Talk Radio site. And, of course, her show is known as Researchers at the National Archives and Beyond on Blog Talk Radio. The show airs live every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. But, again, it does exist as a podcast, so you can listen to it today at any time. But this was just a really, really, really good show, and the discussion was quite, quite fascinating. So, yeah, tune in. I think you'll enjoy it. Now, I guess there are a lot of things that have been going through my mind this week. I taught a class recently at this past week at the Benjamin Banneker Park and Museum in Greater Baltimore, in Baltimore County. And one of the things that I presented was a case study, and it's a case study of a family based in Baltimore City for many, many years, but the family actually comes from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, at least one branch of the family does. And what was interesting was that, and again, I've seen this happen in the past, well, it turns out that the family was actually a family that was free before the Civil War, before Maryland abolished slavery, which was in 1864. This family was found in the 1860 census. The family was also found in the 1850 census, unknown to the individuals who descend from that family. As a result, I was able to share, in fact, this was with the director of the museum, and share with her information pertaining to her family, and the fact is that it has never been known after 150 years or more, actually 160 years, that the family was free. The family was free before slavery ended in Maryland. No knowledge of this. I often ask myself, well, how can this be? But it can be just because it does happen. I know many people who descend from ancestors who were in the Civil War, but they never heard of that Civil War soldier in the family, although they may know that, oh, yes, this is our family. We're from this particular community in Mississippi or Virginia or South Carolina or wherever, but they never knew that their ancestor was a person who was a freedom fighter, who fought for the freedom of himself, his family, and for others, and in some cases, or for others, because even people who were free enlisted in the Civil War to fight. Well, it's fascinating because one of the things that I have found, other than that desire to have that really nice family tree, the freedom story is overlooked. Even if they were free in 1860 or 1850, well, at some point in time, there was someone most likely who was enslaved. Well, how did freedom come? Did freedom come through the accident of birth? And by that I mean a person who maybe was a descendant of an enslaved man and a woman who was an indentured servant from England or Ireland. There are quite a few people who have that history, and so they were truly born free because their status followed that of the mother. After the mother's indenture was up and the debt was paid, she was free and her children would be forever free. Whereas if an enslaved woman gave birth to a child, her children would be enslaved. And as a result, that sometimes it's not always understood. So if they were free in 1860, how did they become free? If they were not freed until after the Civil War, how did they become free? There's often this feeling, which is the missing story, this feeling that, well, we sort of waited around and waited for somebody to tell us we could go now. You know, hey, put on the brakes. And do you really know if that's how emancipation came to your family? There are many stories that are missing. Some were runaways. Some enlisted in the military. Some became contrabands and emancipated themselves. Why would you skip that? That story alone is the most empowering story. That story alone, if you have individuals who literally walked to freedom, Wow, my goodness, that is far more empowering than always seeing ourselves as the victim, some terrible people doing terrible things to our ancestors. You know, sometimes there were those sweet victories, those sweet stories of success that we have to tell. So then, of course, I ask you as a researcher, why would you skip the freedom story? Incorporate that. And of course, how do you do it? I think I'm going to be writing a series of blog posts on that because there are many ways to find that story. Sometimes you find that story in military records, yes, Civil War soldiers, Union soldiers, United States colored troops. Sometimes you find those stories in homestead records and those applications. Sometimes you find those stories in the Southern Claims Commission. Sometimes you find that story just locally, right there on the soil, in the local history. Read those histories and find out literally what happened. And look at the Freedmen's Bureau records to find out also how freedom came to them. Amazing, truly amazing stories are there to be found. And we should all make a commitment to telling them. So, anyway, oh my goodness, I'm looking at the time. Wow, I think our time has passed, my goodness. But you know what? I really appreciate you for being there. I love hearing from you. I'm so excited when I get things in email and see what people are sharing with me, documents that they've been able to found based on discussions that we've had. And so please continue to share those and share your announcements. Or if your organization has a press release coming up, let me know. I'll pass it on to the listeners as well. There's so much out there that's going on. And wow, we just scratched the surface here at the African Roots Podcast. But you know what? There are a lot of things coming up this spring. I'm going to be traveling with my camera again and also with my recorder and want to find out what these events are like for you and how helpful they are, and hopefully maybe some new discoveries that you'd be willing to share with us as well. But in the meantime, it is time for me to wind things down. I do appreciate you, though. Thank you again and again. But I do hope in the meantime you continue to work on some of those projects. I'm amazed at some things that I'm seeing that are going on. Some are community efforts and some are individual efforts. Those who are busy writing, I applaud you. In the meantime, hey, please continue to do what you do. And you know what I'm going to say. Keep researching, keep documenting, and always keep sharing what you find. Take care, everyone. Be well and be safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.